You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
So around July, we took a look at the state of Fly Safair. They were accused of ignoring regulations where it came to foreign capital and ownership. We spoke to the CEO of Kemair at the time, saying that it had created an unfair environment for some of the local players, and we could potentially expect to see some other ramifications follow from there. Well, those ramifications have come through. It looks as though the International Air Services Council has ruled that the shareholding structure for Fly Safair is not compliant with South African law. I'm joined on the line by Guy Leach, editor at SA Flyer and Flightcom, to take a look at this and see if we can make sense of it. Good evening, Guy. Thanks so much for taking the time. This latest ruling by the International Air Services Council, what implications does that have for Fly Safair, and what is the ruling specifically?
Yeah, hi, nice to be with you. Well, okay, so let's start off by defining there are actually two air services licensing councils. There's the international for airlines flying out from South Africa to outside South Africa, international destinations. And then there's the domestic licensing council for internal domestic flights. The International Air Services Licensing Council has now ruled on the complaint made by Airlink and by Global or Lyft. And they've said that, well, they've ruled Safair structure is not compliant with the regulations that require airlines in South Africa to be at least 75% resident owned. And the Domestic Air Services Licensing Council has not yet ruled, but I think that most of us are expecting them to simply follow the lead from the International Air Services Council. So what does it mean? Well, at this stage, Fly Safair only operates about 4 or 5% of its total flights outside of South Africa to places like Zanzibar and Mauritius. So almost all of its flights are inside South Africa. But this decision's been a long time coming, and the Air Services Licensing Council has said that it requires 20 days to come up with a sanction or a finding. At this stage, we don't really know what that's going to be. But to push ahead, perhaps to answer a question you haven't yet asked, I suspect it's going to simply put Fly Safair on terms to rectify the situation, you know, within a very limited period of time.
Guy, when we talk about rectifying the situation, what does that look like for Fly Safair? We've kind of explored the fact that having foreign capital means you can leverage off of a parent company's balance sheet and all of that. It gives your business a completely different picture to the ownership structures that might be sitting locally. What are some of the permutations around how this rectification or this correction could look?
Well, yeah, on the one hand, the Air Services Licensing Councils could come down very heavily, and in theory, they could ground the airline or withdraw its license until it has fixed the situation. I'd very much hope it doesn't happen, and I would like to think it's not going to happen, because Fly Safair certainly had a case that they actually were compliant with the rules, and that case revolved around the nature of the trust that holds the shares. They were using a precedent set in 2017 by Comair, where a South African trust was in fact allowed to hold shares. But the ruling this time is that it's not allowed to hold shares because it looks through the trust to all the Irish owners. So what actually happens? Well, my view is that they're going to give the Safair a week or three to make, quite frankly, just rejig the ownership. They can, but quite simply, just by changing the share register, create South African owners, probably with loan accounts for the actual share amount, very similar to the way BEE deals are done. So I'm hoping, above all else, that the airline doesn't get grounded, and I think it's very unlikely that it will get grounded right before the Christmas season.
Guy, when we look at that ownership structure, you mentioned something around just rejigging the share registry and that. I want to get a look at the UBO registry, because that's now a new thing, the Ultimate Beneficial Ownership Registry. Won't that have an impact on this, where even if we rejig the share registry based on who the ultimate beneficial owner is, they still might not be compliant?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there by referring to the ultimate beneficial ownership, because that's where the ruling was that FlySafair had fallen down, even though the trust was locally registered, resided with the Air Services Licensing Council. So, aircraft leasing company in Ireland. And so it was deemed to be Irish. Well, I still think it's probably easy to have properly South African resident owners for the shareholding without too much trouble. But I'm not a company secretary. I'm not up to speed on that stuff.
Of course, of course. Guy, I want to look at the implications for users. So, worst case scenario, they are grounded or they don't meet the requirements. And so I want to look at scenario one, them being grounded. Scenario two, them losing their license. The state of the aviation industry in South Africa. I mean, we've lost SA Express, we've lost Mango, we've lost Kulula. We can't afford to lose another one.
Very much so, especially because FlySafair has become by far the dominant carrier. It's now carrying about 66%, two-thirds of all internal traffic. So it would be absolutely catastrophic if FlySafair was to be grounded. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I don't like to use the phrase too big to fail, but that's certainly my view, is that it would be completely unreasonable for them to ground the airline on what is actually a very minor technicality. Let me just point out to your listeners that very few countries, or not many countries, have a restriction on foreign ownership as restrictive as 25%. A more common level of foreign ownership restriction is 50%, or indeed none at all. Many countries, perhaps the more enlightened countries, will have no restriction on foreign ownership at all. Not that there isn't a case to be made for foreign ownership, and the case and the complaints made by Miles van der Meulen at Semair or by Aer Lingus and Lyft have a grounding, because if nothing else, everyone needs to be playing to the same rules.
Speaking of those same rules, Guy, when we look at the rest of the aviation industry, there are those other players that are still there. I want to quickly dip into South African Airways. They came out and said for the first time in a very long time, possibly for the first time ever, that they are debt-free. They are looking for an equity partner, and they are looking for a 3 billion rand injection. In that kind of scenario, given the ownership of SAA at this stage, does it make sense for a foreign party to come in on that side and say, look, here's the money. We don't want significant ownership. We want some ownership, perhaps. We want to get SAA back on level footing with the rest of the international airlines. But at the same time, would that not improve domestic competition as well? We know SAA used to fly domestic.
And it still does. In fact, SAA is still the only airline that's offering what we call a full-service offering. In other words, a proper business class, not simply isolating the middle seat for a couple of rows. The question is quite complex. The reason SAA has a real problem, SAA would love to get a foreign partner, but let's face it, government has an agenda in owning SAA, and that agenda is a developmental one. Whether it's either skills development, which is a straight loss, or it's to fly to routes that might not initially be profitable but might be important for BRICS purposes. One of the great classics in this regard was that SAA used to fly to Beijing, and this was 10 years ago. It was losing a million rand on every flight it flew, but it continued to operate that route because it was developmental in terms of our relationships with China and the BRICS partnerships. But the real factor is, are there any investors out there, or other airlines specifically, who have the skills and the money and are prepared to invest in SAA at this stage? And the answer would seem to be no. Let me just take you back to the beginning of that question, where you said SAA was debt-free. I think that's the least interesting claim it can make, because quite frankly, it's debt-free because the South African taxpayer was forced to bail it out to the tune of 30 billion rand just in the business rescue process, let alone all the other earlier bailouts, which have taken it to 60 billion rand. And in fact, it's not strictly true to be debt-free. It still has liabilities in terms of Competition Commission claims to other airlines, and it has still some debt in terms of the payment for instance, unflown ticket liability and so on. So, but yes, at least it's got a positive balance sheet. It's got a 6 billion rand property portfolio, and that's what it's hoping to be able to use to leverage to buy much needed new aircraft.
Well, the aviation industry is certainly shaping up to be quite an interesting space, especially ahead of the festive season, which is one of the busiest times for that industry. We'll leave it at that, Guy. Thank you so much for those insights and for helping us unpack some of the decisions that are happening. That's Guy Leach, who's editor at SA Flyer and Flightcom, joining us to take a look at the latest developments from FlySafair, but also what that could mean for the aviation space as a whole.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.